All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Schuttemeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest is former Philadelphia Flyer sniper and fan favorite, Shimon Gagné. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What's going on, Nast?
Not much, brother. What's up with you?
You know, a little learn to play action, holding some kids up, showing my mitts off.
Who the mitts? We know you got those, dangles. Brother.
Oh, yeah, you know, dangling around 4 and 5 year olds.
I've seen it. Looking I've seen strong. It. WWE champion just walked by. Sorry. Big E, Big Elvis. Man. Lots of stuff happening last week in hockey. Lots to talk about. Start with our boys, the Flyers. Tough go the last four games. Well, 3 of 4. Tough loss against Buffalo. Come back with a good win. And then in Boston, you know, having a lead. And it happens. Teams blow lead. And then the last game wasn't at all what you need after a loss like that. But was it for a lack of effort? You got to remember missing Coots. You know, Morgan Frost steps in. He's really going to be a really good player, I think, in my opinion. He ends up getting hurt. Philip Myers is hurt. You don't ever want to make excuses, and the guys definitely are not making excuses. But it was a tough week for the boys after the 2-0 start.
Yeah, it happens. You know, it's early in the season, so you know, that's a bonus, I guess. You know, losing a guy like Coots obviously is deflating. You never want to make excuses, but he's nearly impossible to replace, right? He's just such a leader and a two-way forward. So losing a guy like that certainly has an impact. But you know, I think the bottom line is they're not scoring goals, and you know they're giving up too many. You know, blowing the lead. At least they got the point out of that game. Otherwise, it would have been really devastating. But you know, to bounce back with a 6-1 loss effort is tough. So, I mean, you know, I think we might've got ahead of ourselves last week with our predictions there, but I think they'll be fine. You know, it's early in the season. There's going to be some learning curve. There's going to be some bumps in the road. It's better to get them out of the way here early and then go into the playoffs strong. So it is what it is. You know, they just got to score more goals and obviously defend a little bit better in their end. I think they'll be fine. You know, I think Carter Hart will bounce back. He's mentally a strong human being. So we're all human. They're all human. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to have off nights. But I would expect for them to bounce back for sure.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's like we said, you know, at the beginning, 2-0, you can't go crazy. You can't get too excited. But you also can't, because you lose a couple games. You know, it happens. It's a hard league, which we talked about too. I mean, every game there used to be back in the day, it seemed like not guaranteed wins, but pretty much some guaranteed wins, you know, if your team shows up and, you know, but nothing's guaranteed in this league anymore. It's actually, I think it's great because every game's a game, and I think the boys will be fine. Like you said, I'm not rattled by it. Like you said, Carter, that kid's mindset's unbelievable. You know, Moose stepped in the other night. We didn't talk about him. He had a great game, which we've talked about him before. He's just a solid veteran that is a great pro and comes to play, and he had a great year last year, and he's there, you know, and maybe plays next game. I don't know, but they're a great combo and they'll be fine. Like you said.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, Moose is a great supporting cast for Carter. And, you know, I know obviously frustration set in at the end of his game there the other day, but you know, he's, like you said, he's built to respond and he's resilient. You know, Moose, I would expect probably going to play the next game and just maybe give Carter a break and move on. It's early in the season.
Yeah.
You know, get the cobwebs out. I don't think anybody should be hitting the panic button yet by any means. You know, it's one of those things. You got to respond though. You know, it's like, it's easy to talk about it and you know, drop the X's and O's, but at the end of the day, you gotta perform and you gotta execute and you gotta score some goals, and I think they'll be fine. So I think you know, it is what it is. There's you know, I know it's only a few games into the season, but they're one win out of the top spot. So
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, exactly, you don't want to get too into it and too wrapped up in the, you know, a couple losses. But, you know, in saying that, it is a shortened season, obviously, and you can't drop a couple more in a row and then expect to, you know, to be in the mix the rest of the way. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, outside of the Flyers, some interesting things going on, some movement around the league, a big trade there with Columbus Blue Jackets, Winnipeg Jets. Did you know Dubois at all? Or
I don't even think I've ever met him. I've obviously seen him play.
Yeah.
A good player. I mean, first line center.
No kidding.
I was shocked at the shift.
Oh man.
Took the other night.
I got him traded.
I mean, wow. I was talking to a buddy of mine today earlier, and I was like, if that would have happened 10 years ago,
oh my God,
someone may have grabbed him on the bench, if not in the locker room for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised if Nick Foligno didn't get in his face after the period was over. Just, you know,
yeah, that was a rough
captain. I love his game, Nick Foligno. Like, that guy shows up. He's a great, great guy too. I've actually known him since he was a little kid. Shows you how old I am. I had his dad as a player my first year, Foligno.
Yeah.
Man, that shift, that might've been the least amount of effort. I hate saying I'm an equipment, you know, manager, but watching it, you know, it was like, I mean, what did you think? I mean, I know what you probably thought, but
it looked like one of my shifts back in the day.
Oh,
floating around trying to find a big hit, caught in the middle of nothing land. And
I don't think he was looking for
my defenseman.
I don't think he was looking for anything.
Oh man, he was frustrated for sure.
Oh, my God.
What was that, 48 hours after that shift, it got him dealt. But that was rough. I think it's a good trade. They obviously both need a fresh start somewhere else, but you know, compare that shift to the Mike Richards shift.
Yeah, there's a little difference.
Oh man, what a difference, eh?
Oh my god, yeah, no, you can't even, because I someone said the shift the other day. I'm like, no.
No,
the shift is Mike Richards' shift, and you're right. I mean, you were talking about totally different ends of the spectrum there. Wow, I was actually shocked by that. I actually flipped that game on, and they showed Dubois sitting on the bench. Like, he hasn't moved since, you know, he's grocery stick, which
exactly.
He may have been that once or twice.
I see that. Responded to that.
What's that?
I wonder how Torts responded to that shift.
Man, I would love to know. This is one of those things where you wish you could. Yeah. Like, he's probably just looking around going, don't we have a game?
Let's trade this asshole.
He noticed it because he was done after that. That was all he had. So it was crazy. But yeah, I mean, Dubois is a good player. I can't sit here and act like I know a ton about him, but I know he was is a good player, obviously. But to pick up Line A, man, this guy.
Yeah.
You talk about scoring goals. I mean, he could score 30 with his eyes shut. Yeah. I think. I mean, it's easy for me to say, but you pick up. I mean, your power play just went.
Oh yeah.
Went up. Big time. Once, you know, he's got to fit in, and I would imagine, I'm not even sure, but I would imagine Max Domi's on their first power play unit. I'm not really sure, but you got a big time player there now that, yeah, like you said, it's good. Both guys probably needed a change of scenery. So, you know, Line A hopefully goes in there for Columbus and wants to light it up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, quick Line A story. I don't know him or anything. I've met him, but, when I did the World Cup of hockey for USA in 2016, I totally forgot about him being the high pick there in the first round. And we were playing Finland in Washington. And the very first shift of the game, he came flying down the right side. I still didn't even realize it was him. And he let a wrist shot go. And it reminded me of Jeff Carter.
Oh yeah.
You remember effortlessly skating faster than everyone and just a little snap of the wrist, but he shot the puck and I was working the door and was at our DN, and that puck, Quickie, Jonathan Quick's an unbelievable goalie. Obviously we know that. This thing went by Quickie, didn't go in the net. It hit the glass, but then Quickie kind of moved and I'm like, who just shot that puck? Yeah. And then he came by the bench. And I was like, oh, it's a kid, Line A.
Yeah.
Wow. And then obviously I got to see him the next few years here in the NHL. But he's a goal scorer, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think he'll do well in Columbus. He just needs a fresh start and some new scenery. I think it's good for a lot of guys in those situations when they get stale. Go somewhere else and start fresh. So how about your boy Semmer?
Man, how happy were you for him? Like, I love that man. I was so happy he got that goal the other night. A couple records with that, didn't he?
Yeah, it was his 500th point and I think 100th power play goal.
That's
awesome, his first goal as a Leaf, I believe, too. So
yeah, it was. I was so happy to see that. I got like 3 texts from people saying, your boy just scored, Semmer just scored, you know, and I'm like, oh, shoot. I missed it live, but I went back and obviously watched it. But, could be happier for him, hometown guy, you know, there. And I know he's excited. You know, Semmer, he'll fit right in Toronto. I mean, how can
he looks
know?
Good. He looks good in the white and blue.
He does, man.
It's just,
he is one of the best team guys I think I ever, you know, there's a bunch of you guys, but I mean, you talk about a team player, man.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, and things when he was here with us, and he ended up getting traded, unfortunately, at the deadline. He wasn't playing as well as he could, and he knew it. And, of course, there were some injuries there involved, but you guys never make excuses in hockey. And, you know, of course, he's not going to say anything, but he was doing anything he could. You know, like, he was fighting. I remember the one night in Pittsburgh, we were down 2-3, and he hadn't scored in a while. He got in a big fight, had his nose broke, but won the fight. And, I mean – I remember Claude gave him the player of the game helmet because he got us going. We ended up winning the game.
Yeah.
Because he was willing, you know, he went out there and did that. And, you know, other things weren't going his way at the time. But anyway, what a great man. I was happy to see him get that. And hopefully he gets a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure there's more to come.
Yeah.
Right in his office there inside the power play. Good. Right on. Well, I think it's about time that we introduce our next guest.
All right. All right, Riggs, let's get on to our next episode here with the Simone Gagné, the Gaggy, which is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Pigskin fans, the moment you have been waiting for all season is right around the corner. And DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55, is bringing back their golden ticket giveaway with up to $55 million in prizes up for grabs. All you have to do to get your share of these huge prizes is enter DraftKings' free Super Bowl Prediction Challenge. Once you submit your picks, you will get a free instant prize up to $25,000. And if you have the most predictions correct, you could win the top prize of $1 million. Download the app now, enter the free prediction challenge, answer questions like who'll score last, and boom, get ready to make it rain, baby. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to its players since 2012, so they know a thing or two about big paydays. Download the DraftKings app now and use your promo code Knuckles to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl prediction challenge. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. So use promo code Knuckles now and enter the free $55 million Super Bowl challenge. Only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55. Terms, conditions, and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
I'm Derek Settlemyer. We're very, very excited today to have a special guest on. This guy looks like he walked out of a GQ shoot or something. He's so damn sexy and good looking, but we're so happy to have the Gaggy, Simone Gagné. What's up, buddy?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate
you. You're welcome. Congrats on your show, guys. I've been watching, and you guys are doing a good job. So, congrats. Really happy to be on the show today.
Thanks,
brother.
Once the COVID restrictions loosen up, we'll have to have you in person, because that was the plan always. But
yeah,
struggling with the protocols. So appreciate you carving out the time for a Zoom call.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's the way to do it now, I guess. Huh? So, yeah. But it will be pleasure next time I'm down in Philly to sit down with you guys in person.
Awesome.
That'd be awesome, man. Be awesome. Gaggy, what's going on, man? What are you up to these days?
Not much, buddy. We've been pretty much locked down here in Quebec City. We're having curfew at 8 p.m. every night. I guess everybody else, you know, in Canada or United States, we struggle with the COVID-19 and affect everyone, businesses, the kids. Kids going to school, that's a good thing. They didn't stop that.
Oh,
but my oldest is playing peewee, and the season's been stopped now since November. So we'll be able to skating once in a while, just me and him, but no practice, no games from him. So basically right now it's almost like he's losing the whole season. Mm-hmm. And same thing with my two girls, you know, they do some dancing in gyms, and everything's been canceled. So it's a tough time, but at least we start to see that the case go down, and look like the curfew has been working, and hopefully we'll have some good news in the next couple of months with the vaccine that start to come down here in the country, and we'll cross our fingers that hopefully this summer the life will get back to close to normal.
Yeah, I hope so. My little guy's, he gets to go to school. He's back in school Thursdays, Fridays, but he's here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And it's tough on, he's six. So it's tough on the younger kids, I think, maybe than the older kids. But it's starting to, things are getting a little better around here. So hopefully soon, like you said, we can get you into Philly, one, to hang out, and two, to get you in the studio as well, man.
Sure. Sounds good.
Yeah, tough times for everybody. I think everybody's going through it in their own way, shape, or form. Nothing easy about this last 12 months. There's no question about that. But moving on to your hockey career, Gags, obviously, had an amazing career and spent most of it in Philly. I mean, do you want to talk about, you know, 1998 when you were drafted, you know, 22nd overall, and then, you know, just that progression and the, into, you know, from a junior hockey player into the role of being, you know, arguably one of the best goal scorers in the game in your prime. You want to talk about that process and the feeling of being drafted and coming to Philly?
Yeah, sure. Sure. You know, my year that I was supposed to get drafted was 98. Like you said, the draft was in Buffalo. And funny fact, you know, when you're ranking to be selected in first round, you're pretty much meeting every teams in the NHL. And I met probably more than 28, 29 teams. And the only team that I didn't sit down and meet was with the Flyers.
Oh, no way.
So I had no clue. I had no clue that the Flyers were going to select me 22nd overall. I was ranking 15, I think, at that time. So all the teams that I met the day before the draft, I remember a couple of them. One jump in mind was the Blackhawks, I think, was like selecting 14 or 15. And they said, if you're there, we're gonna pick you. And so basically Chicago come up and they select, I don't remember his name, but for sure that was not me. So I was a little bit disappointing. And then they were not the only team, a bunch of team that said if I was going to be available at that time, that I'm going to be their pick. And so more the first round goes on and on and on, and I'm not getting drafted. And and now Flyers come up, and I said, no, that's a team that I don't think they want me, because I didn't sit with them. They didn't ask me any question, you know, no meeting with the Flyers. So no, that's it. I'm not going to get drafted 22nd by the Flyers. And I think Jersey were right after the Flyers. So I guess I might go to Jersey. So, but Bobby Clark, go up and said from the Quebec Rampart, Simon Gagné. And I was pretty excited to be Flyers at that time. And the fact that I didn't know, my brother grabbed me and said, hey, I was part of two training camp with the Flyers a long time ago. So it was almost following the footstep of my dad.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad Mr. Clark, he got your name right. I remember he
got
Claude.
It was not like Claude Giroux.
he knew your name, buddy.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah. But the one thing was after, you know, sure, I asked around the table, and one French guy that was a scout was Simon Allais. And he grabbed me on the side. He said, we didn't meet you because we knew what type of players you were, and that you were first on the list. And so it felt pretty good after that all that time, even if I didn't sit with them and meet with them before the draft, that I were their first pick on their list that draft year.
Yeah, I always find that interesting. I've heard this before, where teams have drafted players they never interviewed. You know, it's I guess it's ballsy, but I guess if you've watched you enough to know what you're getting, I mean, you know, they're confident enough in the pick. But I mean, there's a lot to be said about sitting down with someone, looking them in the eye, right, and learning a little bit more about their character. So I'm still shocked that happens. But you know, the fact that you interviewed with how many other teams, you said that the Flyers didn't interview you is a little bit interesting, but nonetheless, it worked out obviously in your favor, and obviously any team you can get drafted to is great. But I'm always interested in the psychology behind you know, what was on behind closed doors when you're making picks and stuff. But awesome career. I mean, talk about, like, you know, you come into the NHL with the Flyers in 99, I believe, you know, and the evolution of, you know, the game. Like, you played 10 years with the Flyers. Like, can you talk to, like, a little bit more of that old school, you know, you're still kind of in that little bit old school era, and then how the game evolved by the time you landed up retiring?
Yeah. Well, like you said, if you look at the rules, the way the game was playing before the lockout in 2004, if you look at tapes, if I look at tapes during my first season, I cannot believe when you're back checking, you're allowed to hold a guy and skate with him. That was crazy, you know, and there was a lot of holding and grabbing. Was not too much space down low in the ozone. Was a lot of battle one-on-one and fighting for puck, fighting for space, and a lot more hitting, a lot more fighting too. That was a type of hockey that I think was harder to play. You had to battle through a lot of things to end up in scoring space or having a chance to score a goal. Those 30, 45 second shift, you were dead after 45 seconds. If you stay longer than a minute, you're dead. So you're dead tired. So that was the type of hockey I knew to play, you know. Right. Even in junior, it was the same way. I knew that my first year, Roger Nielsen was their coach, and another funny fact, I got drafted as a centerman. I never played left wing in my whole career before that. So, and Roger Nielsen, after 10 games, I think, I'm not sure if I had a goal. Maybe I had a goal or two, but I was playing on the third or fourth line, something like that. Maybe with Chief, I think, on the line. But it was hard to get in points playing with Chief. And Roger came and said, "Hey, it'll be you know, what do you think if we try you on the left side, on the left wing, and you'll play with better players? You play on the first or second line with Ricky or Leclerc, Lindros was there, Rod Brendamore was there, Rick Tocchet." And I said, "Yeah, that's something pretty good, sure."
Yeah, right.
And at first it was hard because people that that never played a game or never played a winger on hockey before, and especially in that type of hockey, when right. that puck coming around the wall, you know that the defenseman from the other team is going to come down and hit you pretty hard, or, you know, I had to say I struggled a couple of games before feeling comfortable, especially when that puck was coming on my side. Roger was really patient with me, give me, I think, like 10 games before deciding if I was going to go back to center or stay on the left side. And after a couple of games, I felt pretty good. And sure, like I said, it helped when you play with veteran players like Rex and Eric Lindros or Rod Brendamore at first. So that's pretty much the first part of my first NHL career, early on. And like I said, I had a chance to play with great, great players, great veterans that show me the right way to be a professional on the ice and off the ice. At first, you know, be honest with you, you could see I still have my little accent from Quebec City, but at first I was not speaking too much English. You know, yeah, you understand the coaching, you know, all hockey language the same way, you know, a puck or shooting the puck and stuff like that. It's pretty much the same thing in junior. But so Eric Desjardins was one of our defensemen, and he took me on his wing and kind of helped me to get better speaking English. You understand the language a little bit better.
Yeah, pretty solid mentor there too, eh? Pretty grounded human.
I could go down the list, and one guy that had a short career maybe in Philly, but Dan McGillis, he's the guy that I was staying at the hotel at Hampton Inn, next to the – but at first was at the Coliseum. It was not even the skate zone.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
I didn't have a car, and like I said, I was not speaking English. And Dan from Ontario, a little bit of French speaking where you're from. So he was speaking French pretty good. And I remember getting a call in my hotel room. I had no phone at that time, no cell phone. And he called me and said, "You want me to pick you up in French?" I said, "Sure." And so he helped me, give me some ride to go at the practice and go to lunch after practice and stuff like that. So, and I never asked for it. And he's the one that was really cool from him to do that and help me to feel comfortable and having a right to go at the rink, what time to go at the rink, you know, not getting late and stuff like that. So so Dan was really good with me my first year.
Gags, you, when you came in talking about all those guys, you come in as a 19-year-old. I mean, you're playing with men, like grown men, 30 years old. Back then, the league was more of older players too. But yeah, like you said, what a great group of guys. You just named them all, like for mentors and to help you become pros, because everyone you just talked about were unbelievable pros.
Yep. Yeah, and I could go down the list. I didn't mention Bundy. Bundy was there to show me other things off the ice, but
well, maybe not have always been the best things, but it's okay.
That was the way the game was playing at that time, and off the ice was part of it too. And that was one thing with that group of guys. We were really close. Bonding was fun, you know. After games on the road. Now, Philly, all the games on away was really close. So we were coming back, and a lot of times after a road game, we end up going at the Main Street Pub in Jersey. All the guys, they keep the bar open for us. So a bunch of guys, we were going there after games and watching our game on TV because they were replaying her game later on and talking about the game. And that was fun. That was cool. And that's the type of thing you don't see too often anymore in this league. So the game changed, but that was part of it. But to go back to your question, Nasty, was I could go down the list. Was all those guys had great career, but I was 19 years old. The youngest guy next to me was Brian Boucher. And Boucher already had a wife. I'm not sure if he had kids, but he was already married. So I had a girlfriend, but I was by myself for a bunch of times. So it was no Willie came down 2 years after, but it was no Justin Williams, was no younger guy like me to understand what I'm going through. So, but those guys took me on their wings and make me feel welcome right away. And like I said, I learned so much from that first year. I was confident to make the team at 19 years old because of the way I play in junior, the way I play with Team Canada at World Junior. That gave me a lot of confidence. And but like I said, don't know if we're talking about draft. If I was, if you're getting drafted by another team, if I will have the same first success that I had my first year with the Flyers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's hard to ever know that, but I guess, you know, the fact that you landed up in Philly with a great situation, it lands up being, you know, the make or break for the player, right? I mean, a great player can land up in a bad situation and then, you know, their career could be, you know, at least at the very start, rough. But it sounds like, you know, it worked out very well for you. You mentioned all these great players that Flyers had, and, you know, not just great players, but great people, which, you know, is obviously more important at the end of the day. But just building off the, you know, the evolution of the game, you mentioned, you know, the off ice as well as the on ice, you know, the obviously the clutching, the grabbing. The speed of the game's increased through the roof to this day. But, you know, the off ice, like you kind of mentioned it, like, you know, that it was a different animal back then, right? I mean, that was almost like part of the culture, was that team bonding. It was like you leave practice, and maybe it was even before your time, but it was like almost mandatory to show up at, you know, at the wherever tavern for a couple midday pops. But, you know, maybe talk about like what you've seen even towards your NHL career, how how the game evolved off the ice and how mindful guys became and how much focus there was on actual, like, you know, sports specific, hockey specific training. And then just, you know, maybe, you know, removing some of these, you know, say bad habits that guys seem to have had, you know, throughout their careers.
Yeah. Well, like every sport, and you know, the game will change, will get better. And if you go back 20, 30 years ago, hockey players didn't train in the summer, you know, and one guy decided to train and he, sorry the language, he fucked up everything, I guess.
But, hard to believe,
but no, the training camp was to get back in shape and finding your game, and season start and you're good to go. But one guy decided to do it, and he started to play better, I guess. He ended up better, a better player, and that's the first step. And after that, in my time, I was off ice, you know, maybe go at the gym in the summer, maybe five times a week, train an hour and a half, do some cardio. Don't put the skate until maybe August, maybe a couple of weeks before camp. And that's, we're talking about early 2000. But I have to say the game kind of changed after the lockout in 2004 when the game got faster. They changed the rules. No holding, no grabbing. It came down to a speed game. No more red line. That was one thing that that opened the game a lot more, and so he had to be in better shape, be better quick, work on your quickness. So your training had to change in the summer. If I go back and remember leaving the Flyers for the summer, telling me that I need to get bigger, you know, up here, you know, to gain some weight, you know, you need to get close to 200 pounds before next summer. So I remember working out and tried to get the muscle, and you know, having a body that will look like a culturist, you know, and when they check your weight, you know, you want to be heavy, and that's not the case anymore. You want to take care of that so you don't getting hurt. But you want to get stronger down here, get bigger legs and be strong up down there, and quick feet, like I said. So your training had to change. Slowly, they start to look at more your body fat. At first, I think my first couple of years was like, you need to be around 12, 14%.
Right.
And if I go back to my last year with Boston, that was 10%. So, and when you're getting older, you know, that's, it's tougher, you know, to get leaner, and it's easy to gain weight and stuff like that. So, everything changed, train wise, off ice, and, you know, and now, you know, you get more stuff that players have to do of the ice, not only gym, but he had to hit the ice, working on their skills on the ice, power skating, stuff like that. So it's definitely more work now that players have to do that I had a chance to taste a little bit at the end.
Yeah, it's evolved quite a bit since you've left the game, actually, too, just the way these guys train and the mindfulness that goes into it. And, you know, like you said, like there's no more bodybuilding. There's no more like heavy lifting. It's just so, so much about prevention of injuries and you know, being a functional athlete. And I just wanted to ask you a question, being a skilled guy. And you're you grew up in the era of still when there was enforcers. And I understand that part's pretty much out of the game now, but you know, me being, you know, a tough guy back in the day, I had a memory of you my first year with Hitch. We were in West Point. You probably don't remember this. And we were at a bar after one of our little things there. And I remember you coming over and talking to me. And I don't know if you remember, like the training camp where I had been up and down. Hitch made a public statement that we didn't need toughness. We didn't need a tough guy. And then I can't remember the game, what happened, but I think a couple guys got pushed around. So next thing you know, I'm called back up and then I'm in West Point, but you came over and you're like, you know, Roz, really appreciate, you know, having a guy like you around, and, you know, it's meaningful. So I wanted to say, first of all, that I appreciate that, 'cause it's still etched in my memory, you know, having a guy like you say that. But, you know, I just wanted to get your perspective on having a tough guy on the team, whether it was Brash or any guy you played with, just having that support around you. Did you feel like it had an effect on you being able to do your job better?
Oh yeah, that's for sure. You know, 100%. And we all, you guys know that I'm really close with Brash. And my first couple of years, you know, we had some tough guys too. You know, Chief was there, and even like Rick Tocchet once in a while. I remember getting pushed around, and Rick Tocchet just grabbed the guy and kill him almost. And I was like, wow, that's. And he said, kid, just play your game. You know, you'll get your space. No one will bother you anymore. And maybe from that point on, I understand right away that, wow, I got some people get my back. I don't have to worry about that. Just play my game and I'll get my space. And I end up be a player that had a bigger role really quick early in my career. And Brash came down after, and that was the same way, you know. I don't remember getting hit dirty by someone or a cheap shot or something like that. Even after whistle, you know, no one was touching me. If one guy came and do something to me, I knew that my buddy Brash will go on the ice and take care of him. And I have to say that when Brash left, we had no one, I think. I don't want to have the respect to, maybe I forget someone, but
Friggy landed up in there for maybe half.
Maybe Friggy came. Yeah, Friggy was there. Yeah, but
there was a gap there though when Brash left.
There was a gap or something like that. So I knew how much mean to me first, and how important it was for player like myself or other players or even younger player to have a guy like you, like a role like that. Then so I was pretty happy when you had the call to come up and take your care of business for us once in a while. And to me, I know it's slowly you start to don't see that anymore, but I think you have to still be part of the game. You still see some dirty stuff out there that no one, you know, you do a cheap shot, but no one will come and see you after. Yeah, you'll get suspended or getting fined, but there's no better way, you know, to go see a guy and give him one or two punch, and the next day he'll understand a lot more by, you know, getting, you know, whacked a couple times than getting fined a couple thousand or getting suspended for one game. So I have a hard time with that, but in the same time, I understand that you know, they want the game to be more clean. Is that going to help? I don't know, but the big thing, I think, Rouse, I think it's with concussion now. But the other thing that I've been reading, fighting, it's part of maybe the problem, but not that much, I think. But
yeah, only 4% of all concussions come from fighting.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So it's after, you know, it's after that what guys doing, you know, after their career, that I think we have to pay a little bit more attention to it. And I know the NHL's got a program with that for that, to help players that struggle after hockey. And I know that's what it is for now. And it's something we'll talk about not only now, but for the next couple of years for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. Gags, one thing, going back to the training aspect of everything you were talking about, you know, they wanted you to bulk up. It's too bad you didn't know Riley then, because somehow he weighed 225 when he played for the Flyers.
Double whoppers with cheese,
man. On about a 175, 180 frame. So there's something he was able to take that got him really strong and a little bit bigger. But the band's up, yeah, it might. Yeah. Gags, wanted to ask you about the Super Bowl party you had, or bring it up, not ask you about it. But Riley, I'm not sure if you know about this. Gags, obviously one of the leaders on the team. And years back, he had a Super Bowl party and made the mistake of inviting everyone, staff included. And so myself and even our local Bauer rep, Timmy Parr, one of Gaggy's good buddies and all of our good buddies, actually. Oh, so quick story. So, you know, we're going over Gaggy's beautiful, beautiful home, and he's having the whole team over, and Timmy comes. So we got our bottle of Grey Goose and Gags, big kitchen, and us, all this food and everything. So I pour us a drink, and me and Timmy crush one really quick. And so he says, give me that bottle. He starts pouring it. And as he's pouring, he looks at me and he says, I'm on a roll. I'm like, oh, wow, this is like a triple, right? So anyway, fast forward 2 hours later, me and Timmy can barely speak English. We may have been speaking French. I'm not sure, Gags, but
maybe.
We ended up, I mean, it was a many stories to that whole day, but one of the funniest things is Timmy's wife, she was trying to make sure we weren't ruining Gags' place. We ended up upstairs. He had this really nice floor and these couches, and me and Timmy start throwing peanuts at each other. Don't ask me why. And guys are probably like, get these two out of here. Gags was being nice about it, just laughing at us. Next thing you know, Shelly bends over to pick these peanuts up, and the old thong's coming right out of the pants. And I'm like, whoa, here we go, boys. And all the guys start dying. And she kind of had a crush on Knuble, on Mike Knuble. And Timmy sees Noob's like eyes like blow up, and he comes flying across Gag's room. And he's a lot bigger than me, that's all I'll say. Head right to the shoulder, just a absolute nails me into Gag's couch, right across his wood floor. You can hear it, and that's that. So he's like, "You, we're out of here." We got Gags didn't kick us out, but we did get kicked out of the party, not from Gags. So, but it was a great time.
Overserved.
That was not for me, because I had a. I remember that party was fun. It was a fun party, and I know Timmy from a long time, and I know he had a good time there, and that was pretty fun.
That was a good time. Gags, we were you had a lot of good moments, obviously, in your career, man. I mean, you won a gold medal, you won a Stanley Cup, but here in Philly, we'll talk about your Stanley Cup a little bit, but in Philly, I would imagine one of your biggest favorite moments was that when we came, everybody always talks about it, but when we were down 3-0, you had been hurt, you broke your foot, you come back, get the OT winner in game 4. If I'm not mistaken, you had a couple goals the next game in game 5, one in game 6, and then you can talk about game 7. What a series. Riles, you were there. Like, I mean, it was one of my favorite times in my career that I had, if you want to call it a career in hockey. But you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's definitely that's really – had a lot of good moments with the Flyers. First year, even 2004, before lockout, losing against Tampa Bay game 7.
That's right.
That was special. But that run in 2010, that's have to be the highlight of my career. Yeah, I won the cup with the Kings a couple of years later after that. But that run with the Flyers, even today, I still thinking about it. That if we had won, you know, and that still hurt me, you know, thinking about it. But that round against Boston, that was fun. That was fun. That's it's even hard to believe that we won the game. And I had a chance to, I think it was like 10 years anniversary last year or this year or something like that.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. So we had a chance to watch it on NBC, I think, with a bunch of guys from the Flyers. That was part of it. And that was cool, you know, being down 3-0. And I remember, like you said, I was not playing the first three games. And I was going to try to play game four. I was not sure. So I was not really too close with the team at that time. I was doing some rehab and I was not working out. You know, I was like 2 weeks just doing some rehab. That's it, you know, resting. And so be honest with you, like game four was almost not possible and not imaginable that I was going to play game four. You know, I'm not in shape, you know. Yeah, 2 weeks, but, you know, we all know hockey is if you don't do nothing for 2 weeks, it's going to get hard to get back out there for the shape, and, you know, you'll get tired pretty quick. But so after game three, we lose game three. I come down. That's the first time I go down to the locker room after the game. It was not the first time that we're down 3-0. And most of the time when you come to the locker room and you're down 3-0, you'll see some head downs and basically the series is over. You're going to lose game four and you're going to get swept. So that was what I think that's the way the locker room is going to look like. Everybody's going to get down. It's going to be quiet, you know, that's it. Now see you next season. And, so I come down and I was surprised that no guys were confident that no, it's maybe 3-0, but we could be up 2-1. If you remember, yeah. We lost game one that's in right. overtime, right. game two by one goal, game three by one goal. And we're guys were like, hey, I think we can go back and win that series. And I say, okay. So that gave me some goosebump and feel like, want me to play game four and do something, you know, and try to come back. And lucky enough, with the help of Jimmy McCrossin, the trainer staff and training staff and the doctors, they give me they numb my foot and I was able to play game four and we were able to win that game. And from that point on, we felt really confident that we're going to come back and at least tie the series 3-3 and force game seven. And you never know what can happen in game seven. And that's what we did. And that's something no one can take that away from us. We did one of the best comeback in the NHL history. And after that, we took off and we had so much confidence. Montreal was in front of us. But we're really confident that we're going to go all the way that year, not just go in the Stanley Cup final, but winning the Stanley Cup.
Right. It's funny because you're down 3-0 and you don't ever think, oh, we're going to lose. But like you said, it's part of like any series, any sports. I mean, you're down 3-0. The chances you coming back is not very good. Anyway, you score the overtime winner. Then I think we shut them out. We beat them like 3-0 or 4-0 the next game in Boston. And I'm like, uh-oh, because you know the center is going to be rocking for game six. If we get that one now, you know, obviously, like you said, anything happens in game seven. We get to game seven, you get down 3-0. And I just remember thinking, God, I felt so bad for you guys we came back for all of us, but more you guys doing the real work. You get down 3-0 and I just – and you're like, God, man, what a job we did to come back. It's too bad. And then Labby calls a timeout, and it was a great timeout. He had the knack of kind of doing that too a lot. I remember him telling you guys, just let's get one before the period's over. Just get one. And sure yeah. enough, I think JVR kind of a C&I shot it. I believe it broke the stick of one of the one of their defensemen, and then found its way through Tuukka. And then after that, it was just like, it felt like you guys, we went in after the first, I'm like, we're going to win this game. Like, yeah. It's easy to say that now because we did, but the feeling was very positive.
Yeah, that's exactly, you just described it the best way. We were confident that, especially after that first goal, at 3-0 for Boston, confidence was really low at that, yeah. at that moment. And, but Labby called that timeout and I think that timeout, kind of helped us, you know, to, to settle down and relax and just say, we're there. We came back. We forced game seven. Yeah, it's 3-0 in Boston. That's going to be tough, but just get one before the first period. Just one. Don't think about scoring three goals. Just score one. And when we saw that first one go in by GVR, and that was a lucky goal. Over his skate, and that was not a nice goal. But to win, you need some luck. And it's almost that give us a sign that we're going to win that game. Now it happened exactly like it was supposed to happen, and like Lavi told us, and that gave us some confidence. And after the first, we look at each other and we felt that let's go get the second one. And after that, pressure is going to be on Boston. And that's exactly what happened. And when Danny B scored, I think the tying goal or Hartsey, we knew that. That was their game, and they took too many men on the ice. It was five minutes or 6 minutes left, and like I said, it was almost like the karma. It was almost like it was meant to happen that we were gonna get a power play, and you know, lucky enough, I'm the guy that got that goal, and it was a setup play that we try a lot of time in Richie on the power play. Bunch of guys that did it before, the sit-in twins in Vancouver, you know, Eric or Danny on the wall shooting the puck hard, and I'm just putting my stick. So Richie did the same thing. I just put my stick there, tried to deflect it, but it was a Boston Bruins defenseman there that stopped it with their shin pads, and the rebound, the puck just came right back on my stick. And I remember from there, I said, just shoot blocker side. And when I saw that puck go in, that was a really, really good feeling. And I think all of us were really happy. And after that, we had so much confidence with a goal thing in the playoffs, and our defenseman core was unbelievable. So yeah, it was 5 minutes left, but we were confident that we'll be able to win that game.
That goal, you want to talk about a goal scorer's goal, Riles. I mean, that was an unbelievable goal. And you're right, man. I love watching. I've watched it 100 times. I just love watching the bench too. And when you scored that goal, and there's a really cool thing on that I've seen before. I don't know if you guys remember, but a ton of people went to the center.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
And it was so cool. They show your goal, everyone celebrating on our bench, and then they go to the center. And it's delayed a second, and then everyone. I mean, it's just one of the still gives you chills, like seeing it. It was a great time. That was one of the best years I ever had in hockey. That's for sure.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's tough way to go down. You know, I was there for moral support that playoff, but nonetheless, I dressed for every warm-up and, you know, was around. And, you know, I felt, you know, with the way that season had gone and the way we got into playoffs and the whole, whatever, just the whole drama within the playoffs, that we were going to win the Stanley Cup. Like, that's just the way, I mean, I think everyone felt that. It was obviously disappointing, you know, to go down the way we did, but, you know, that's just sports and freak things happen, but,
Yeah, exactly, Riles. And it sucks, and you learn from that. But you know, going to the Stanley Cup, it's some players never had a chance to go once in their whole career. So that's a big accomplishment. And when you go there, you know, both teams want to win. Both teams believe that they're gonna win it. And to me, I think that. You know, we're a beat up a team. You know, Prongs was hurt, Richie was hurt, Cartsey was hurt.
Yep.
I was hurt with my foot.
Goalie was banged up.
Wow.
And sure, you know, it's almost impossible to be 100%. You know, when you're in the Stanley Cup Finals, everybody's got some bruises, little injuries, but. I thought that our group was really banged up at the end. We're not 100%. Like I said, it's impossible to be 100%, but let's say like 90%. when your top guys are hurt, it's hard to win. And to me, that we forced game six, we lost in overtime, but that was not the Flyers that we saw against Boston or Montreal. We did our best. No, we had some guys that were unbelievable. Danny B, Artsy, Ville Leino. Those guys, you could see they had some bruises. They were banged up, but not like had to take some needles before games. They were okay. You see them with a bag of ice after games, but not much. So you could see they had something left in their tank. But me, I remember, and even Richie and Cardsy were like drained. Like we had no more left after game six, and to win, you need everything. You need that little extra energy. You need luck to win. But to me, if the team that have the most healthy guy in their lineup has got a better chance to win. And sure, I don't know how many guys were hurt on the other side, but to me, I felt that maybe Chicago were better on that side, and that's maybe why they won it. Because you force game seven, even if game seven is in Chicago, Stanley Cup final, everything can happen. Yeah. You never know.
You never know. That's right.
Since we're talking about Stanley Cups, I mean, why don't you talk about your year in LA there, winning a Stanley Cup. But since we're talking about staying healthy in playoffs, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that playoffs, the LA Kings went the whole playoffs without any injuries or man games lost. Is that true?
Yeah. It's funny because basically what I'm just saying about a run in 2010, I kind of... To me, it was, when you go all the way, you go in the Stanley Cup, you're going to have some guys that hurt, that will have to take needles before games and stuff like that.
Yep.
I think it's, in my mind, it's normal.
Yeah.
It's part of the game. But that the point I was bringing in 2010, I went through it in 2012.
Yep.
But I never see a guy that had to take a needle. You see some guys with ice, a bag of ice after a game, but we were not banged up. We were like LT group, no big injury. Your top gun was like fresh, energized, no big injuries on their side. So that group was fresh, was healthy. And to me, I think it's part of success if you want to win. And like you said, I don't think we one guy missed a game. And to me, that was we had a really good hockey team. But I think if you want to win, you need that on your side too.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, you got to stay healthy. Obviously, you got to have the right team. But staying healthy is obviously key. You lose one or two guys and that's the difference between one or two goals in a series and winning and losing. But
yeah, and even Rouse, if you have a guy that is not 100%, but he's got a separate shoulder or he's got a broken foot or something, it's he's a good player, but he's not close to 100%. He might be 80-85%. You like to see that guy not having to take a needle or taking some medicine to help him to play a little bit pain-free, but it's almost impossible. So if you're able to play and not having to go through that, you'll get a lot better result from your top players if they're healthy.
Yep, that is the truth. And, that last year there, that year that you won in 2012, I mean, I think you played 34 games. You played a lesser role. Were you banged up that season?
Yeah, I after Christmas, I got hit. Not a big hit, but I had another concussion. And I was older at that time. I was ending at the end of my career. I don't know. Like I was 30, 32, 34, I think, and had two kids. Another concussion. It was maybe my, I don't know, 7, 8, one. So it start to be a lot, you know. That was in 2012. We understand a little bit more about that type of injury. That could be something that you'll have problem in the future. So I didn't want to take any chance. I told the Kings that I want to make sure that before I come back, I want to be 100%. And I had to say things went really, really good before I got hurt. I had a really good start with the Kings, and I was really excited to join a team that I knew a lot of guys. Justin William was there. Richie got traded in the summer. Cartsy came later on, but John Steven was an assistant coach. Terry Murray was a head coach at start of the season.
Well, that's right.
Got fired, and after that, Daryl Sutter took over. But I was really excited. I felt that a lot better than when I got traded to Tampa Bay. That took me a while before I felt comfortable there in Tampa. But in LA, I feel like home was fun. But injuries happen, and especially that one in my in my case, with the history I had in the past, I didn't want to take any chance. And I took 3-4 months off. After that, when the playoffs start, I start training again, skate again with the, we call it the Black Aces. I'd be around the team a little bit more, going at games and stuff like that. And you never know. And that year we went all the way, and I was able to come back just in time for the Stanley Cup final and play some games, and finally be able to realize any hockey player's dream, winning the Stanley Cup. And a couple of years just before with the Flyers, the bad taste, the bad memories just kind of went away when I left that Stanley Cup. And it was almost that I lost with Philly. I pushed pause, and I get another chance to go in the Stanley Cup final a couple of years later. And that time, not losing my chance to accomplish the ultimate goal.
It must have been something. It's always it's always nice to win anything, but to winning at that level, especially if you've put in, I think, probably 12 years of hockey, well, NHL hockey at that time, to finally to hoist the Stanley Cup, must have been something surreal. So congratulations again for that.
Was awesome. It's funny how excited I always get for guys like Gags and Chemo and Mark Streich, guys that were here and just such good people, and every guy actually that's left it. You love watching guys lift the Stanley Cup, but it was really special with Gags, and those other guys that I mentioned. Gaggy, quick question. I forgot about Coach Terry Murray being there, and then Daryl came in. Kind of a switcheroo was that with Daryl? Because I've heard so many great Daryl stories. I mean, so many, from Chief, from Richie, from Karts, and other guys too. But I just, what was that like with Daryl?
That was definitely a different feeling in the locker room, and a lot of respect for what Terry Murray did with the Kings. But I didn't like the feeling when I came in. I was really excited to join Terry and John, because they I had a chance to have them as a coach with the Flyers, and I like both of them. And Terry was a head coach, but I could see, like, even from day one at camp, that something was going on with Terry and the group of guys that were already there with the Kings. So so that was my feeling day one, and we had a okay start, but win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game. But with the type of team that they put together with the signed free agent and Richie trade, we were not supposed to be a 500 team. And I told the guys, I said, "Guys, don't And you could see, like, guys were waiting for a coaching change.
Right.
And I told them, I said, guys, don't wish for a coaching change because you don't know who's going to come in.
Right.
Yeah, he's not – maybe Terry's not a tough guy. He's not the guy that will come and yell at us and crank up us before games or throwing stuff, you know, between periods to wake us up to do something. But – and that happened. He got fired. And when they announced that Darryl Sutter is going to be your head coach, some guys was whoa. That was a wake up call because that was definitely a different type of coaching. But you know that he was going to be demanding on us, tough on us, maybe more old style type of coach. But he got the best from us every game. Even that season, I think we clinched the playoff. I think last game of the season, we finished in eighth seed.
That's right.
To play Vancouver in first round. So we were really close to missing the playoffs that year. So he did a great job with John Stevens stayed in the coaching staff. But like I said, I'm sure Richie's got better story than mine. Like I said, I didn't play much after Christmas. So a lot of respect for him because he gave me my chance to get back in the lineup in the Stanley Cup final. I had a really good chat with him before jumping in the lineup, telling him that what I went through in 2010 with the Flyers, the bad taste that still had in my mouth from losing that Stanley Cup, and he reflect to his same another story. Basically, he went through the same thing with Calgary against Tampa Bay, losing in the Stanley Cup final. So both story kind of was similar to each other. So that was a good chat and a lot of respect for him to give me my chance to get back. Like you said, Ralph had a different roles than I had with the Flyers or with Tampa Bay, more like a third, fourth line guy at the end. But winning the Stanley Cup doesn't matter where it is, what type of role you have. It's more the accomplishment of what you did your whole career, all the sacrifice, all the injuries you had to go through, what your parents did for you, you know, when you're younger. So it's a trophy you celebrating with all your friends and family, your teammates. So it's a lot of things comes to your mind when you win that thing.
No kidding. Yeah. Just awesome, makes it all worth its while. Hey, when you sit back and reflect on your childhood and your hockey career, when you win a trophy of that nature, for sure. I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned the concussion that last year, and I knew you had a concussion and I forgot that you're out for that long with it. How are you feeling today? I mean, with your just physical body and your head and necks. I know you had some neck issues there too when you're in Philly.
Yeah. Yeah, I had some neck problem that was coming from the concussion that I had to from the past, and right now I'm feeling pretty good. And at the end, when I decided to stop playing and quitting hockey, I have to say that was a lot of things that came to that decision, but my injury, all the concussion that I went through definitely pushed me to the retirement at the end. And I didn't want to take any chance to maybe play another season or two. Definitely at the end, my roles were less. I was playing maybe 8-10 minutes a game. I was not playing anymore in the power play. One thing I remember was tough was when you go in overtime 3-on-3 and you're not on the ice, you just sit there and for 5 minutes and watching the game, and you end up winning, but you didn't do anything. So that hit me. I was, I'm not sure if I like that. And so, but at the end, I didn't want to take any chance and maybe waiting for that last one that will put me out of hockey and maybe having some problem in the future, and had three kids. I want to be able to enjoy life with them, playing hockey with them, doing stuff with them. And I'm lucky. I don't know what the future is going to hold for me with that. Like I said, I had eight of them. But right now I'm doing great. Some, like you were saying, some neck problem once in a while, some headache once in a while, but I think it's coming more from my neck than my brain. So, so lucky enough right now. So hopefully I'll be okay for the future too.
Well, that's good to hear, because I'm going to throw this out here since we're on the pod. I do have a spot on my men's league team. You are 40 now. I know I'm lying about my age. I haven't quite got there yet. Maybe. But Gags, we do need a guy that can. We got a lot of scores, but we could use all of your experience and everything. You may not get a full shift on our team. We just won the championship again. Not sure if you knew about that, but
you know.
But you are 40 now, but you're gonna be 41 in about another month or so, a little over a month. But you're more than welcome to fly, and we'll fly you in every Sunday night. You get to stay over.
My surf buddy, turf.
Yeah, exactly.
I still play once in a while, so I'll come down.
Okay, good. we just started our winter league, so 2-0, not a big deal.
Is Timmy Parr on the team?
No, man. No? Timmy's so busy with his kids. He's not playing right now. I don't know when he's going to get back into it. But
okay.
Also, Gags, I just so you know, I just finished up 11-0 as a head coach in Elvis's Chipmunk League ball hockey. So
congrats, bud.
Yeah, thanks. I'm sending out some resumes now, because you never know. Like, sometimes early in the year, the NHL is looking for a new coach. Like, it's a shortened season, so I'm figuring they see that 11-0 with my Chipmunk League, 4 to 6 year olds. I've got a shot. I mean, I'm a little demanding, but I think I got what it takes. 11-0.
Oh, yeah. I was little Elvis.
Oh, he's good, man. He's a mess. Good. He's a terror. Yeah, he's in school right now, or he would have been standing right here trying to the gaggy. Yeah, for sure.
He's unbelievable on Instagram. Like, he's so funny. Like, he's a little nasty, huh?
Getting
he's a mess, that's for sure, man. That's for sure. How are you?
Roses.
Yeah, he loves them. How about your three kids, man? I mean, they're getting big. I see them on Instagram. They're just beautiful family, man.
Yeah, my oldest is going to be high school next year, so
I can't believe that.
Unbelievable.
Makes me feel old.
Me too. I'm going to be 41, like you said. So it's going fast, but so high school for him next year. Pee Wee tournament here down in Quebec. So hopefully hockey's gonna so it's that's a big thing, you know. Rouse,
yeah.
I'm sure you remember Pee Wee, like that's a big thing to come down here and play that tournament. So hopefully we'll cross the finger that hockey will get back playing down here. And my two youngest one, Juliet and Lily Rose, they're doing good too. They're doing some dancing
hip-hop,
and gym
hip-hop dancing,
hip-hop.
Yep, yeah. See them, yeah.
They have a TikTok, they have Instagram now. So I'm gonna.
You're watching that closely.
I have to. They're still a little young. My second one's 9 years old, and my youngest is gonna be 6 years old. So
that's awesome.
It's still too early for that. But whoever will come here and knock on the door, I'll have a little sit down with him and make sure that. I know a lot of things about that, so I'll have a little chat.
Maybe a little
good chat.
Yeah, exactly, man. Riles is years back. Gags was always, you know, just such a great professional and such a nice guy too, as you know. Always this guy, like I said, looks like he walked out of GQ. I mean, look at he's probably been in GQ. I don't even know about it, but anyway. Obviously, he was a heartthrob here in Philadelphia. As Michael Delzato would say, you better wear your high waters, because it's going to be a flood tonight in the center when I come out of the ice. If you know what I mean, DZ loved that. But anyway, Gags is, I forget where we were. We were just having he had taken the the staff, some of the guys for dinner, and these girls asked to take a picture. Of course, he was nice, nothing bad, but they were just talking to him, taking pictures. So he comes back over to the table. I'm like, Gags, what were they saying, man? He said, I don't know. She told me she loved the gaggy. I will never forget that. I say that all the time. It's one of my favorite things he ever said to me. She told me she loved the gaggy. Made me laugh,
that's
man.
That's funny.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Well, you look great, brother. Still got the best hair in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Looking a little short on the back. Used to be a
yeah, a little thing, style. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, change the look a little bit. But try to keep myself in good shape, but it's tough, especially right now in that time that this is it's not easy. You know, all the gyms down here are closed. You can't play hockey anymore. The rinks are closed. So
yeah,
it's hard to get to keep you. Yeah.
It was one other thing, Gags, I wanted to bring up just because me and Timmy Parr, we still talk about it to this day. And we had Ivan Provorov on a few weeks ago, and he's kind of like you, maybe not as good as you were with your sticks, but he's like that with it, with his skates, with everything. He's got a pulse for everything. I was so amazed when I got to the Flyers as the head equipment manager and the way you would go through your sticks. Gags would hand me a stick. Riles, you were using a Green Goblin. I don't know if you may remember the old Green Goblin had the holes down the shaft. Riggs is like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
But
righty, Gags, lefty, let's go.
Yeah, right. So that reminds me when Chief told Ben Eager had a bad shift and he comes back to the bench and I guess Johnny Stevens was coaching and he's like, calls Eags back up and Chief just leaned over and goes, hey, Eags, just leave your stick here. You don't need it. We were dying. But anyway, Gags we'd get a batch of like 24 sticks in and he would go through them and he'd be like, ah, this one's too heavy. And I'm like feeling these sticks. I'm like, they feel the same, Gags. No, trust me. Timmy's like, oh, geez, Gags. Like, so we send these sticks back that Gags says are no good, right? Sure enough, factory weighs them. They were dead on what Gags said they were. He's like, they're too heavy. So we started getting them marked, Gags, with a they were either in between like these
5 and 10 grams, I think.
Yeah, like but I mean the fact that he could pick that out, it blew my mind away. So obviously I wasn't gonna argue with the man anyway. He's a goal scorer, he knows what he's doing, but it was just I was amazed by that. And me and Timmy always get a chuckle out of it because even Timmy's like, no way, Gags. And then we get the stuff back and they're like, Timmy, he's dead on. We're like, ooh, okay.
That's why he's a sniper.
That's right.
That was something I have to say. I was maybe a little crazy about it, but to me, that's one part of your equipment that need to be right on.
Right.
You know? Yeah, and
sure.
100%.
And we were talking about starting in 98, finishing in 2015, I started playing. I had some wood blade with Easton right. shaft.
Remember. Oh, yeah. You wore Easton gloves your rookie year, didn't you?
Yeah, Easton gloves. Yeah. And after that, I signed with Bauer and Nike, I think. And you know, you were curving your blade, you know, with
right.
Yeah. So that blade was with the torch, but that blade, after not even like one game, that was dead. Like it was. The wood was too soft. It was almost playing with a plastic blade sometimes. So, and I tried some one pieces and I could not understand why players like to play with that. There was no feeling. Puck was bouncing on it. And in that 2004 lockout that we had, we missed the whole season. So I remember asking Timmy Parr to send me some one piece stick and I play with it for the whole year in men's league down here. And I start to get used to it, and get a better shot. And after that, you know, I cannot believe that how many years that I play with a wood blade with a Easton shaft or a Bauer shaft. That was like not even close to what those sticks doing. And even today, their sticks are getting better and better, and but
so light.
One
oh my God.
Yeah, and one thing, yeah, my stick had to be really light, not, it, I like it pretty stiff, was really stiff. But no, I was really picky on my tools before games. Like one new stick every game, and Nasty was good enough to let me cut a new stick, sometimes two, three sticks a game. But, you know, if you remember before warm-up, I was putting three stick there and I was trying them once, like one by one to decide which one's going to be the one tonight. So I was tough on Timmy Parr a couple of times by a text message after games that, you know, your sticks are bad and they're too heavy.
Poor Timmy didn't sleep that night. You know he didn't. He's so, his anxiety is so bad anyway.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Oh, man.
Well, I appreciate you hopping on, Gags. I know we've chewed up, you know, over an hour of your time, but really awesome to reconnect. This has been awesome. Really good insights and appreciate your time as always. So,
you're welcome, guys. It was fun.
Yeah, this is great. All right. Episode 7 was brought to you by Settlemyer Skate Sharpening. For all your hockey needs, visit SettlemyerSkateSharpening.com. And Body Check Wellness, hemp-derived CBD and functional mushroom blends. For all your wellness needs, check out BodyCheckWellness.com. Thanks to Simon for coming on and carving out the time to sit with us today, Nas. That was awesome. I appreciate him doing that for us. Obviously, we wanted to get him in person. But with COVID and regulations and travel and the whole bit, obviously that wasn't doable. So the next best is hopping online and sitting down with our old friend.
The Gaggy.
The Gaggy.
She told me she loved the Gaggy. Who doesn't, though?
Yeah, what a good man. Yeah, he was an awesome teammate. You had him obviously longer than I had the chance to play with him, but yeah, you know, one of the best scorers in that era for sure, no question, and had an amazing career. You know, tenured at the Flyers, misses the Stanley Cup there by a hair, and then goes on to win it a couple of years later. So, you know, all the grunt work and all the time you put into hockey is worth it when you hoist that one, for sure. Not that I know what that feels like.
Yeah, me either.
I can imagine.
I wish I did, but. Yeah, it was cool to, you know, for him to touch on that, talking about losing that bitter taste, I guess, you know, from when we were there and lost. And it was cool. I thought it was cool when he was, you know, once he lifted it, he said it's like he's thinking about a childhood dream. All you guys had as kids, you know, growing up playing hockey. I couldn't imagine, you know, like it's. For me, is playing basketball, shooting a shot at the buzzer to win the game, you know, like, but you guys, everything's for the game 7 Stanley Cup finals, you know, and he was able to do that. It was cool hearing him talk about it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think once you're in the end of your career and you land up winning, you've kind of accomplished it all, right? I mean, I think he played a couple more seasons after that, but they weren't significant in his career. You know, I think after the concussion he talked about there in LA, he was never really truly the same. So he packed it up, but obviously you can go out with some pride and honor of the game when you have a career like that and land up winning at the end of the day. So props to him for all that. No question. And I thought it was fascinating too. You know, I always love talking to skill guys, but, you know, obviously guys in that era have a little bit different, perspective on it, but you know, talking to Gags about having some toughness around him and how it made him feel comfortable, especially early in his career, I thought that was nice to hear. And you know, saying some good things about Brash and, you know, that role is powerful.
Yeah, it is. It was cool, you know, like it's like you said, that stuck with you. You remember him grabbing you and saying that, and that when you have top tier player in NHL. You know, you hear them say that, and he's not the only one we've heard say it, but it was really cool to hear Gaggy. You know, we knew him, we kind of knew he liked that, but like you said, it was great that he pulled you aside, you know, when you were just making your way into the NHL with the team, you know. Obviously we had known each other a little bit already, but for a couple of years, but that was cool that he acknowledges that time and now, even thinking, you know, which we've talked about too. I just think you got to be able to play the game, but you you need toughness, man. Like, yeah. I really believe it. And obviously I never played a game in my life in NHL or any pro hockey, but I've been around it long enough to know that you guys like yourself, and that's important, man, for players to feel comfortable and not worry. I remember being in the locker room 2 years ago when Phil Kessel was still with the Penguins, and I was talking with him and Sidney Crosby, and we were talking about toughness, and Sid was just saying, it was funny, he was actually talking about Wayne Simmonds, and I said to him, I'm like, Wayne can't find a fight right now, you know, we're 12 games in or something. I said, every time he goes into a pile, guys are looking for quarters on the ice, you know, they don't even want to look at Wayne. And Sid was like, right, because he's a beast, you know, like everyone's like, everyone knows how tough Wayne Simmonds is. And, you know, Sid was like, basically said, I enjoyed having a guy, you know, and they had Reeves, there and traded him away, which kind of surprised me a little bit. Yeah. But I don't know enough about that whole situation. But anyway, it was nice to hear Gaggy talk about that and touch on it.
Yeah, for sure. And when he came into the league, he was with the tail end of those, you know, truly old school guys. He talked about, I think it's Tockett, that, you know, mentioned, like, you know, we're going to create some space for you. If anyone touches you, we got your back. And, you know, not that Recky fought, but, you know, Chief and, you know, that era of guys, you know, that was like, you know, when, you know, I say not the Broad Street Bullies were still fully in effect then, but you know, there was some legitimate heavyweights still floating around, and that role certainly existed. So to hear from him talk about that and, you know, the evolution of the game, you know, obviously towards the end of his career, there wasn't a whole lot of fighting left, and he kind of seen the game evolve from the old school clutch and grab and the interference calls that they had early on there after the lockout to the speed of the game now. So, you know, really good insights for sure, because he just crossed over into that era of, you know, old school to, you know, to new school, really.
Right. Yeah. It was awesome. I enjoyed hearing him say probably his favorite moment was lifting the cup, but, one of his favorite moments in Philly was scoring that big goal. Everyone still talks about to this day, and, you know, as the God, it was 11 years ago now, but that whole series when the, we were able to come back from that 3-0 deficit, and he was on fire, man. This guy, like, he comes into game four. I mean, every game he scored that series that he played in, and obviously that big goal at the end, what a goal scorer goal that was. So that was cool to hear him say that too.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think of Gags, I just think of scoring goals, you know, yeah, I know. Small stick there and just like a snapper, whatever you want to call it. It was just like, it had eyes every time he shot the puck, you know. It
did.
I wish I had just a fraction of what he closed his eyes and picked.
Many players probably wish they had that.
Oh, man, yeah.
He could score, man.
47 in 1 year. I mean, that's 47, 41 in you know, back-to-back years. That's a lot of goals in the NHL.
That's a ton.
For sure. So, well, the Gaggy didn't disappoint.
No.
It was awesome.
He never does.
Yeah, he's still looking good. Still got the best hair in the league.
Yeah, he does. He knows. You hear him all, like, you know, I got the little longer now. I took the sides down. I love it. I saw him in Florida last year. We were able to go out for dinner and stuff. Guy, he's just so much fun to be around. He's always happy, you know.
Yeah, isn't it always?
He is. His style is good, man. And you know, he's got skills. But it's funny when he started talking about his hair. I loved it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's a beauty. He hasn't changed, you know. He's got the same sparkle and same energy. You know, he's always, like you said, he's always a good guy. You know, like, I always felt like he was in a really good mood. Like, I never remember Gags feeling like he was, like, you know, in a bad mood or pissed off. Like, yeah, obviously he was getting frustrated, but, like, you know, there's some guys you remember just like, oh, wow, he was just like really grumpy and really, you know, mad at the world.
Yeah.
But Gags, obviously, you know, when you think of Gags, you think of, you know, a smile on his face and, you know, he's just trying to feel his way through the day and feel there, good, you know, his sticks, his hair, his neck. You know?
I'll never forget the one thing. We were in the locker room. I don't know what I was doing. I was doing something in the locker room, and you and Randy Jones were sitting there, and Danny Briere and Gaggy were speaking in French. Obviously, you grew up, your dad spoke French.
Yep.
And Jonesy played in the queue.
Yeah.
So he learned French.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget those two talking, and you and Randy answered them like in English, and those two's heads spun around, and they were like, "Wait, what's going on here, man?" And you're like, "Well, my dad's French, and they weren't saying anything bad, but it was just funny, like when you two answered them, whatever they were saying. I didn't understand it, but I thought it was one of the funniest things. I'll never forget that, sitting in the room and those two turning their heads around at you and Jonesy. God, I didn't even know Jonesy spoke French. I didn't know that either. I never put two and two together with him playing, you know, because he played college too. So he played, I believe, Clarkson, if I'm not mistaken, Jonesy. But anyway, I just thought that was pretty funny. But it was, he was great. Great to catch up with him, man. Like I said, like you said, it'd be good to have him come into to do a pod as well.
We'll definitely get him in the studio.
Because I know there's a lot more we could talk to the Geggy about.
Yeah, that's the truth. And there's nothing quite like getting in person with someone and talking to them face to face than, you know, hopping on a Zoom call. But it's second best for the situation we're in. So
yeah, for sure.
We'll work with it. But anyway, Nast, I think that pretty much wraps up episode 7 of Nasty Knuckles. Be sure to tune in next week for episode 8. Have a great week. Stay safe, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.